when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome, welcome to episode 22, The Double Deuce, comms for preppers with a special ops guy. We have a very special guest, NC Scout, who is a communications expert and teaches preppers classes. Very, very good guy. He's going to be our guest today. We're going to talk about comms, but believe me, this isn't going to be, you know, complicated stuff. This is going to be general stuff, why you need to do it, common mistakes. Trust me, we're not like going to say, well, picture a diagram of an electronic circuit and there's this many ohms of resistance. No, no, nothing like that. We're not going to, this is all practical. Shelby, we do practical here, don't we?
We do practical. If you want to read about all the ohms and stuff, study for your ham's license. That's where you'll get the overdose on that. Am I right?
Yes, and it's an awesome cure for insomnia.
Oh, gosh.
So
you and I should preface that. We're in the, both you and I are in the midst of studying for the, you're studying for your general's exam. I'm studying for my technician's exam. So we're in the midst of it. So we'll joke about this every now and then for the next few weeks, probably.
Yes. Well, I wanted to remind people a great way to help this show. And by the way, when you help this show, what you're doing is you're getting this message out to more and more people. And this message may save their lives. That's not corny. Obviously, you guys can understand what we're talking about. So please, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, podcast, it's really important to rate us 5-star, please. Reviews, do a couple words. Say something like, great, great show, or like, Shelby's awesome, or something like that. Do comments. You can do comments on various things, and you can share it. This triggers algorithms to do stuff like push out the show to more people. That's why I ask you to rate. It's not an ego thing, not like a 5-star thing. You know, I don't sit around and look at ratings and reviews and feel good about myself. It's all about tripping those algorithms and getting it out. Well, Shelby, we have a feature we do every show or most shows, unless I forget, and that's the top 100 things that disappear first in a collapse. And this is on our website, which is...
This week, it's number 12, and this is, I'm surprised it's not actually higher up, more in the single digits. Number 12, charcoal and lighter fluid. Those things that will start a fire quickly, whether you need heat, whether you need cooking, whether you need light, whatever. Those things are going to go very quickly. I don't know if I want to prep for those. I don't want to keep a lot of charcoal hanging around, but I think the lesson there is be prepared to have a way to light fires. You're going to need it in a prep, in a collapse situation, excuse me, when there's no electrical heat, those sorts of things. So yeah, those things are going to go quickly. Ask people who live in Venezuela or during the Bosnian collapse. I'm sure that was hard to find.
Exactly. And lighter fluid is so doggone cheap. You have to look for it. I mean, if you just go and get the Weber odorless stuff, it's $6 a can or something, or where we live, high tax, Washington State, might be lower. But then you can go and get a metal can. I think metal's better than plastic anyway, of just regular old lighter fluid, charcoal lighter fluid. I picked some up at an off-brand grocery store, a discount grocery store we like a lot. I think it was $2, $3. Stores well, obviously. Don't store it near flames. If you're that dumb, you're going to die anyway in the collapse. So, I mean... So anyway, a lighter fluid and all of that. Well, I would like to introduce our guest, NC Scout. He and I are acquaintances. We have a ton of mutual friends. He, as I mentioned in the beginning, is a former special operations communications guy and teaches classes. And I'd like to introduce Brushbeater and say hello to everybody. I'm sorry, NC Scout.
Hi, everybody.
He goes by two names. It's you know, in the secret covert world that we have, he has like a bunch of aliases. So we'll go with NC Scout, but some people don't rush here. Anyway, Mr. NC Scout, go ahead and say hello to the folks.
Hi, everyone. Just for clarification, I go by NC Scout. Brushbeater is the website that I run, brushbeater.wordpress.com. And just a little bit about myself, I spent years in the United States Army. I was an infantryman. I was an 11 Bravo, a trigger puller, and worked both in conventional infantry. Some of the guys that are familiar with the Army will know. I was on the line for a while. Did some soft work for a while. My biggest,
and by the way, folks,
best soft, assignment.
SOF is Special Operations Forces. So that, I'm going to decode, interrupt you very rudely and decode acronyms for folks that may not know. Sorry about that.
Right. It's fine. The most rewarding assignment I had was working in a long-range surveillance company, which specializes in special reconnaissance. I had a ton of fun doing that. Went to Afghanistan while assigned to that unit. I have 3 combat deployments, 2 to Iraq, 1 to Afghanistan. Had more fun than I think anybody should be allowed to have. And now, what I've done since I left the United States Army, I'm focused on training civilians for the uncertain futures that lays ahead and the challenges that lay ahead for us as preppers, as Christians, and as patriots.
Awesome, awesome, Mr. Scout, NC Scout. I'm going to get used to your name here. So Shelby here. So what I'm excited to talk about here, and I think this is going to complement. We had a recent interview with John Jacob Schmidt from Amron Radio. Are you? And I'm sure you're familiar with him. And I love. And
yes,
I love talking.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good. And I love talking about comms because I'm kind of in it. Like I said earlier, I'm in the midst of studying for my technician's license, ham license. And so I'm excited to talk about this. And I'm hoping people listen to this and get more broad knowledge of how important comms are and how many ways you can go about it. So right off the bat, somebody doesn't know anything about comms. They're maybe new to prepping. They've worked on other parts of their preps, and they're realizing what I've realized is I need to work on this. What do preppers need to know about comms? If you could give, you know, that one bullet answer to a person saying this is why you need to, why it's so important.
I would say that the biggest thing to begin with is to start simple. Don't get overwhelmed with numbers. With math, with calculating ohms and voltage and watts, any of that stuff, start very, very simple and start humbly. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. You know, I don't think that there's been a better time to get into communications than right now, than in 2019. You know, in this circle, I really don't think that there's been a better time for inexpensive equipment, for the equipment end of it. We've got tons of knowledge out there. The amateur radio hobby in and of itself is getting younger. There's a lot of younger folks that are coming out to it. One of the things I notice in my classes is that with each class, as time goes by, there's a lot of folks that are coming out with literally no experience other than, you know, I got a license and, you know, whatever. But you have to understand the relevance. And in order to understand the relevance, we have to start simply. And just don't be scared. It's something that when I was brand new to the Army, we called it being mic shy. That very first time that you get a radio handed to you and, you know, hey, new guy, you're on radio watch. And traffic comes in and you're scared to key that mic and say anything, you know, don't do that. Don't be scared. Don't be intimidated by it. And it's a huge field as, you know, you're studying for the tech license and the guys that are licensed out there, the folks that are working on advancing their licenses. It is a huge broad field, and you can have folks that have been into amateur radio and communications for a year, and you can run into folks that have been in it for 50 years, and every person is still learning something. So the bottom line there is to just not be overwhelmed, not be afraid, come to it with an open mind, And always ask for help. Always, always, always ask for help. You know, myself, I probably answer 50 to 75 emails a week on just people asking technical questions of how does this work? How does that work? And that's just for me. That's just myself. There's lots of folks out there. It's a huge, huge number of people out there that have a lot of experience. And never be afraid. Never, ever, ever be afraid to ask for help.
Well, NC, you mentioned the classes you teach and you mentioned answering emails. Can you describe the classes you teach and how folks can get a hold of you? Because people listening to this are going to be saying, hey, this sounds really neat, but what's this about classes and what's this about getting a hold of this guy?
Yes, sir. Well, I run several different classes over a broad, diverse set of topics things that I did when I was in the Army, areas of expertise. But principally, one of the classes that I will fill up is the RTO course. And the RTO, in the military terminology of RTO, is a radio telephone operator. It's not a ham radio course. I don't require anybody to have a license or any prior experience to come out. All you have to do is you don't even need any equipment to come out. I'll supply with all the equipment you're going to need for a weekend. What we do is we take the equipment and we make it relevant. We explain why. We go over the why. Why do you need communications? How do you do it? How do you apply this amateur radio-oriented equipment or even the license-free equipment? How do you recreate that and apply it to a grid-down world? The scenario that I go through in the RTO course is oriented to preppers that may find themselves with people post-collapse. They have to put together a team and whatever equipment that they have that they bring out, we have to make a competent plan with that. So we start from the ground up, your PACE plan, creating signals operating instructions. And we create that and we go through that for the weekend. Then we go over traffic handling, report formats, salute, size, activity, location, time, uniform, and equipment, salute report, or location, uniform, time, and equipment, excuse me. We go through all of those things and other report formats that we'll work on all the way through building antennas. I explain antenna theory in a very simple, practical manner that folks can take and apply and then turn around and recreate to their own groups. So the folks that couldn't make it out to class or the folks that didn't really see the relevance the first time, they can say, hey, you know, what did I miss there? Oh, wow, we can build antennas. We can arm ourselves with that knowledge. Very much like the parable of teaching a man to fish, you can supply a man with the food, and that'll last him only so long. But if you teach a man the skill, then he's going to be able to arm others with that knowledge. And that's the approach that I take to all the classes that I run, but especially the RTO course.
Well, oh, very good. So, and I'm... We're doing great on time. This is awesome. So, and see, what are some common mistakes? I know you've touched on some of them, getting overwhelmed quickly, not sure where to start, not doing comms, but what are common mistakes that you see preppers making when it comes to comms?
One of the biggest things is that they get too overwhelmed too quickly. You have to think locally. With communications and prepping, you have to think locally first. Who am I going to talk to and why? Why am I going to talk to them? And then the answer becomes, or the question becomes, how am I going to talk to them? You know, in your last interview with John Jacob Schmidt, something that he said that I really like is that if I can't communicate with you post grid down, then you're just somebody that I used to know. And I really, really like that statement. And for folks going back and reflecting on that, let that sink in. Locally, I can't control what goes on outside of my area of operations or outside of my area of influence. I have to focus on what goes on locally. And the best way to do that, you know, everybody talks about, you know, probably the most popular radio in the history of mankind. Now, you know, the Baofeng UV-5R, everybody has 20 of them because they're really inexpensive. That thing can be an incredibly useful tool. As long as you understand there are some limitations there, and then we cover how to make the most out of it. Something as simple as, you know, roll up J poles, super, super popular. And then the antenna design that I teach in class, building a jungle antenna, building dipoles for it, and even getting into some of the directional communications. You could do a heck of a lot with not a lot of money. There's not a whole lot of expense. You don't have to buy a ton of equipment. You know, another thing that I like to do in class is show folks what you can do with next to nothing. A spool of wire, a few connectors that you can pick up at a ham fest or online, on eBay, Amazon, you know, whatever your favorite online retailer is, you know, Radio Shack, if you still have some in your area. I do, but I think we might have the last ones on Earth. But think locally, and don't get intimidated by cost. Everybody thinks that radio is this big, expensive thing for it to be useful, and it doesn't have to be. It does not have to be at all. Another thing is... I think that I covered this before, but don't be scared to make mistakes. If you're covering information, you're spreading that information, and you're working on your equipment, and you get on the air, and you happen to make some mistakes on the mic, or you don't do something exactly right, hey, don't worry about it. Just keep going, and you're going to be fine.
Well, and you were talking about a lot of practical stuff there, and I think it's a good time to note that you are one of the beta testers and one of the people helping develop PAM radio, Prepper Amateur Radio, which, by the way, update on that, it's going to be out sometime in 2019. I'm working with some software developers. They're super cool guys. They're volunteers. And, you know, it's just hard to get the thing done instantly because they have lives, they're preppers, they have families and everything too. So it's coming in 2019. And this is the kind of stuff we're going to cover in PAM Radio. Well, I had a couple specific questions sort of under the umbrella of common mistakes preppers make. And I think that some of these things are mistakes, but I'm curious what you think. One of them is digital versus analog radios. And I think a lot of preppers getting into comms at first look at, you know, they go on YouTube and they see that there's these amazing digital radios that instead of just being sort of, and I'm completely oversimplifying this, instead of just waves, you know, analog waves, they're little digital packs. And they go, wow, digital's cool. Digital's better than analog. And here's the mistake I see, and I'm curious what you think. People starting out with digital stuff that has all kinds of, you know, complications to it. What are your thoughts for the beginner and, say, the intermediate levels? So there's two questions. Beginners, digital versus analog, and intermediate folks, digital versus analog.
That's an excellent, excellent question. So when I was in the Army... And this is kind of a backstory of how I got into radio, being a trigger puller, and getting into communications. When I got to the long range surveillance world, or LRS for short, I didn't know a lot about COMO. And in fact, in every long range surveillance company, which the Army unfortunately disbanded them, but in every LRS company, LRS for short, they have a COMO section, and we would cross train with them. And the RTOs on a team, LRS is broken down into 6-man teams, and then you have 4 teams per individual detachment. You have 3 detachments inside of the company. Well, each team has an RTO, and you would go and you would cross train with the COMO guys, because we had COMO guys in the company too. Their sole function in life was communication support for us. And I began to get really, really, really fascinated with this is that Commo before that was just this thing that worked, and sometimes it didn't work, but it worked. And if it messed up, then you went and got a Commo guy, and it, you know, you'd have to do it. But then I realized once I got to a team and I was an RTO that it was on me. It was 100% on me to make this work. And I got really interested in it really, really quickly. Now, how that applies to the question, whether it's the beginner, whether it's the intermediate, or whether it's the expert that was there with Marconi making the original spark gap generator. Digital versus analog. There's a lot that can be done with analog that just requires some outside the box thinking. There's a ton of ways to improve analog signals. There's ways to manually, and this is probably going to infuriate some hams out there, but, you know, that's fine. I don't just exclusively do ham radio stuff. Don't overlook the value of license-free Commo either, as I teach in class. But there's ways to manually encode. The old school methods, using brevity matrices, using one-time pads. Amron and Partisan Labs, associated with Amron, has a one-time pad generator. Excellent, excellent piece of kit.
Can you explain
in my
folks,
advanced course, I cover that.
Yeah, what is a one-time pad? Yeah.
So a one-time pad is a manual method of encryption. You have a pad, which is the key. There are two pads that are generated. There's one for the person encoding the message, one for the person who receives the message. That pad is a series of numbers that are broken down into groups. The numbers correspond to letters, and that number pad is the key. It's something that I teach in my advanced class. We cover how to manually encode and decode via a one-time pad in conjunction with a brevity matrix. So a brevity matrix is simply taking a long message and compressing it via letters and numbers into a much smaller stream. Then you use it, then you will encode it via one-time pad and send it. So I could take a very big message, a long, in-depth, detailed salute report, compress it into a small stream, and send it out. And you could still do that over analog means. Now, when it comes to digital radio, when it comes to digital communications, there is a bit of a learning curve to it. The other thing that goes with digital is that because there's a learning curve, you're also introducing more variables. Things can go wrong. I do cover digital communications for the small unit in my RTO course. We focus on DMR, digital mobile radio. I think it's one of the best options out there because it's primarily open source. Open source meaning anybody can get on it, work with the coding. The DMR program itself has been jailbroken. So there's a whole lot of things that you can do with it. D-Star is another good option. D-Star at one time was proprietary to ICOM, and now it's out there and anybody can use it. And then there's a few other options that are on the market that I talk about that are really, really interesting. When it comes to digital,
I'm sorry to interrupt. It's segment one is ending, so we're going to come on out and talk to you on the other end of the segment.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. .com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Hello, folks. Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
And we're back. Sorry, NC Scout, for the abrupt cutoff, but that's what we need to do. We're on terrestrial radio. We have hard breaks. They have advertising, and we just have to do that. So you were talking about digital communications for preppers, and go ahead and finish what you were thinking about that.
So there's a ton of options out there, and DMR, or digital mobile radio, is really one of the better ones, just because it is so common. But there's a whole lot that you can do with it. And if folks are just getting into it, you know, think outside of the box. And DMR, there's a bunch of inexpensive DMR sets that are coming onto the market. The Tytera, or TYT, the MD380 or Mike Delta 380, really neat, well-built piece of equipment, under $100, and it gets you started into digital mobile radio. I think that's one of the better options. There is a waterproof version of it too. That's fairly rugged. It's the MD390. Simple to program, simple to operate. The accessory port on it is the same two-prong plug that you use with Baofeng. So all the same accessories, programming cable and everything, and you'll be good to go.
And one thing people need to know is that it's digital means you need to have everybody on your team needs to have the same setup, same programming, that sort of stuff. It's not like you can have, you know, the MD380 and then another guy has D-Star. I mean, you need, and this is why I'm talking about as far as like a little bit more complicated, definitely something to do at an intermediate phase. But if you start off and you're dealing with different channels and different, you know, D-Star this and that and all these things, it's just easier to start analog. But you're right, digital is a cool thing. It
right.
It has a lot of advantages. Well, you sort of touched on this, but a question I get often is encryption. You know, do we need encryption? And usually the person asking that is somebody that assumes that the NSA on what we euphemistically often call game day, right, which is like stuff's falling apart and conditions are bad, it's the collapse, that anything you say on a ham radio, instantly there's going to be hellfire drones and they're going to come and blow up your position. It's kind of like a action movie view of the world, and I'm not, and you can obviously tell that I don't think this exists. And when I talk about encryption, I mean electronic encryption and sort of complicated and somewhat expensive ways of encrypting versus using code words, one-time pads and other things. What are your thoughts on the necessity or lack thereof of digital encryption?
So digital encryption, as far as hard encryption goes, going back to how I got into communications, I started looking at civilian and common off-the-shelf solutions for equipment I had in the Army. One of the things that I came to find out really quick was that there really isn't anything. There are plenty of things that can be pressed into service, and that's what I primarily talk about and teach. But as far as hard digital encryption goes, for the listeners out there that ask themselves this, and this is something I talk about in class, and I do this in my signals intelligence course too, is it doesn't mask the presence of your signal. Your signal is there regardless. And if someone can identify your signal, if they're close enough to you, they're within range to identify your signal, it may not matter what it is that you're saying. It's the presence that they see. If they're using a software-defined radio, they're using a computer with a software-defined radio receiver, or if they're even using a scanner and they hear the noise that is your digital encryption mode that's even coming over an analog scanner or a communications receiver, they still know that your signal is there. So for folks out there that are concerned with digital encryption, I will say this: given time, a skilled adversary, now I say a skilled adversary, will be able to break it. What they won't be able to do is if you're able to mask your signal, and these are things that I teach in class, is how to actually mask your signal. Maybe that 25-mile range might not necessarily be what you want. Something that we do is in class is we talk about communications windows. And what that is a pre-designated time that both the sender and the receiver, the team in the field and the guy that's back in the headshed in the tactical operations center, is going to have their radio switched on, and they're going to communicate that information back and forth. We don't need to sit there and talk to one another, 24/7. We're going to send those messages via a random time, dark 30 in the morning, and I'm sending my message in. When is my op 4 least likely to be listening to me?
Op 4, opposition forces. Yep. Sorry to interrupt, sir. But yeah. I'm breaking down the acronyms.
No, you're fine. I'm really, really bad about that, and I apologize to the listeners. When are they not likely to be listening to me? And you can do quite a bit with analog equipment. Something that I also teach in class, what's known as a Yagi, or for the folks listening, the old school TV antennas that you used to see on the top of every household, and you'd have to turn the dial and the antenna would be on a rotor and it would turn. Well, it's called a Yagi. That's all that is. Something that you can do with a Yagi that's cut to the proper frequency, that's designed to operate on a certain frequency, is I can directionally transmit my communications. So what that ends up doing, think about this. Instead of having that barn lantern that lights up everything in a 360-degree path, lights up everything in the room, now we're just using a flashlight. So instead of that barn lantern or that light bulb in the middle of the room lighting everything up, we're going to just use a flashlight. Well, our signal coming from our radio is no different. It is the exact same. And if we use that Yagi and we're shining a flashlight in one direction, that's sending our signal into one direction. And it's going to be that much harder for somebody to locate you. So if you're using just an analog signal and you're using a Yagi, you can do a heck of a lot with, say, a $25 Baofeng and a Yagi that I teach folks how to build in class, the principles of how to build an antenna. You're talking about under $40 in equipment, and you've got a pretty good setup.
And I neglected to do something for the listeners. I asked earlier about the classes you teach and then how to get a hold of you, and I don't think I followed up. So how do folks get a hold of you, by the way? We're not at the end of this segment, but I just want to get that out there because people need to be able to get a hold of you.
It's my blog is brushbeater.wordpress.com, and you can get a hold of me via email, brushbeater@tutanota.com. Tutanota is a private email server. It's free. Anybody can get on it. So far, it's been pretty good for me. Brushbeater@tutanota.com.
So great. So I'm just sitting here absorbing. I love this because, I'm catching about half of what you're saying, because your knowledge is so in depth. But now that I've done a lot of studying on the technician's license, the importance of antennas, the importance of all of that. And so I love this. I love being able to get up comms quickly and inexpensively. And you hit it at the beginning, NC, in terms of it's an overwhelming field, and the idea of starting something like this can be what stops people, because it's, people are envisioning, I don't want my house to look like, you know, a comms center at NORAD, for Pete's sake. You know, it's too much. So, yeah, and seriously, and I'm saying that as someone who is familiar with NORAD. But so what are, and you've given us a lot of these, and I'm not talking about the movie War Games. That's not what the inside of NORAD looks like. But what are some you've given us a lot already, but if you had like two or three like pro tips you could give someone right now, and that you only have this few minutes that we have today to talk to them, what are some of those that you would give to them?
I would say one of them is simply building those local networks, going out, meeting your neighbors. If you live in a rural area like I do, supply your neighbors with some license-free equipment. One of the things that Baofeng is really cool for, that UV5R, $25, is that you can program it with all the license free stuff. You know, all of the license free, your MERS and your GMRS, FRS frequencies, and hand them out to your neighbors and start up a local neighborhood net. Doesn't have to be licensed. And I know there's going to be folks that are listening to this. They're going to say, well, you know, but Part 90 versus amateur radio and all this stuff. Hey, that's fine. What we want to do, the end goal here, is to get folks on the air and get them comfortable. Talk to your neighbors and have a local nightly net. Have something really, really simple. Keep it simple. Communicate with your neighbors, something that everybody gets on the air and does. Another pro tip I would say is start building your own antennas. I teach the basics of building antennas, and everybody builds one. Every student that comes through builds one, and they get the ideas down pat, the process down pat of how to do it. Do it. The best way for us to learn is just through doing it. I am very much a visual, hands-on learner, and that's just how I have to do things. I have to do it, and I learn the ins and outs of it, and I make those mistakes, and then I know how to do it better in the future. The solution is not always to buy something for us. The solution, more often than not, for me, is to just go out and build and keep it simple. You know, keep it very, very simple. Keep it humble, and you're going to have awesome results in the end.
Yeah, and I wanted to amplify what you were talking about license-free communications, and add some more detail for folks. They can look this up on their own. You mentioned FRS, which is the Family Radio Service. Just go on Wikipedia, FRS radio, and it's those little Motorola, you know, the blister pack things they sell in Walmart, you know, that they say they have a range of 30 miles, but they really don't. Those things, you can run those frequencies, and you just on Wikipedia, it'll tell you the frequencies, and you just type them into your Baofeng and you're good to go. But you can use that without a ham radio license. There's some restrictions on it, like wattage and stuff. But for what you were talking about, the neighborhood net, it's going to work like a charm. And if you're running it through a Baofeng, it's going to run way better than through one of those Motorola, you know, $30, 30 mile things at Walmart. And the other thing is GMRS, General Mobile Radio Service. And you need to get kind of a license in a sense. You get an FCC license that costs $70, but you don't have to take a test. It's like going online and paying your electric bill, right? You just go online to the FCC. You type in your credit card number. You get this GMRS license for you and your whole family, and it's good for 10 years. And you got a lot of wattage.
Only one person. Yeah. Only one person needs to be the license holder. So, you could have several folks that get on. Only one person needs to have the license.
Which I foresee interesting in the future. Me and the team are using GMRS, and FCC's like, hey, are you guys all related? And they look at Pau, who's Korean, and they look at me, and I'm like, yeah, he's in my family. Yeah, he's totally in my family. Yeah. He's covered by this license. But I wanted to amplify the license-free stuff because I can speak from personal experience, and I know Shelby can also. That ham radio test is a bit of a high mountain. At least it looks that way until you actually conquer it, and then it isn't. But it is, I grant you, it's this barrier. And it's really easy, and I'm now speaking as a man, it's really easy to go, wow, that test is going to be hard. So I'm going to buy more guns. I've been there. I've done that, right? So, and so license free, think about this. And of course, when I say license free, I mean, really what I mean is test free, right? Because the GMRS, you need a license. But like I said, I think it took me 4 minutes to get my GMRS license, by the way. Slow internet connection at the FCC, right? Credit card took a while to process. That's what kind of time we're talking about to get one of these. Yeah, so I just wanted to amplify that because you get stuff in people's hands. And this neighborhood watch thing is really what, in my mind, comms for preppers is about. That's the number one use for it. And it's cheap and you don't need to take a test. And once people hear that, it opens it up. Of course, the second use is, you know, tactical push to talk kit stuff where you're like, you got a headset and you're busted down a door and all of that. And that also is easily handled, by the way, with FRS and GMRS. All my guys on my team can use radios and effectively communicate on frequencies like FRS and GMRS, and almost none of them have a ham license, right? So you don't need it to get stuff done, is my point. So I'm beating a dead horse on that. Shelby, yes, ma'am.
Well, and let me add to this. I just recently, I'm actually pulling it up on my phone right now, put out an article on my social media about how government just came out with a recent report, I want to say March 8th, 9th, something like that, about how they, at govtech.com, they've realized that they have failed miserably in emergency preparedness after 20 years, probably about Katrina. And it says in here, and it speaks to exactly what you're saying, NC Scout, is they recommend in this admission of failure, where prepping and is most important is in your local networks, your local community, and your local really prepping groups. That's what we talk about a lot here. And so I just wanted to say the government agrees with you. I'm sure you are happy to hear about that. But to have these local. So the other thing I wanted to clarify is people hear it all the time, and I'm coming to this conversation as the newbie who's getting used to all the nomenclature. That's a big word. Is NETS. All that is a network. When someone says, "Hey, let's do NETS tonight. Hey, let's just fire up the network and make sure comms are up," and it's important so that you know when something's happening down the road, something's happening a mile or two away, that you can pull up the radio, make sure the network's, and hey, what's going on over there? This is what's going on over here. We just went through snowpocalypse here in Western Washington, and we were texting with neighbors. What's it like over there? Hey, one of our neighbors said, hey, we've got a plow. They had some sort of large equipment that could help us out.
Bulldozer, because we live in a part of the country where your neighbors have bulldozers and it's a great place to be. But yeah, no, it took a little bit of radio communications to get that up and coming. And that is a perfect distance, perfect use for FRS and GMRS. We happen to be using phones and texting, but Shelby, you came up with a great idea after that example with snowpocalypse. We're going to go over to our neighbor's house. They're cool people. They're fun people. And we're going to hand them a Baofeng.
Yeah,
it'll be pre-programmed. Yeah, it'll be pre-programmed with some, you know, like one FRS and one, well, yeah, maybe a GMRS, whatever. We'll figure it out. It's going to be pre-programmed because that takes about 4 seconds to do on a Baofeng.
Yeah,
it'll be like, here you go, use this. And we're going to have, you know, our neighbor channel. And it's going to be that simple. And it'll be fun and they'll get into it. And I bet you $10. Once they realize that their neighbors, I mean, they have a bulldozer and their neighbors have radios, then we're going to start, you know, doing some barbecuing, some stuff. And I got a weird feeling that these are going to be very valuable allies. Both of us will be valuable to each other. And that's what we're talking about.
That's what this is all about.
Yep. And, you know, I'll point out two things with that. The first and most important is, when you're dealing with your neighbors, and I touched on building those local networks, if you hook your neighbors up with a free piece of gear or something saying, you know, hey, I'm thinking about you. Here's something that I'm going to hand off to you. And it doesn't matter whether it's a radio or it's, you know, a piece of nylon, tactical nylon gear for their weapon or whatever. That goes a long way in building that rapport with your neighbors. And when it comes to communications, there's no better way to get folks involved in communications than to just hand them something and say, hey, you know, we're going to start this net, you know, and maybe every Sunday night it'll be like a party line and we just get on, we communicate with one another, keep it casual, and you'll plant those seeds and folks, you know, are going to get into it and they're going to get to enjoy it. Not everybody will, but a lot of folks will. And on that note, the other thing, when you talked about programming them, on my site on brushbeater.wordpress.com, I've got a bunch of tools in the margin. One of them is Chirp. Chirp is a free program that you can download that's updated almost weekly. And that's the program that you're going to want to use to program those Baofengs. Again, it's free, doesn't cost anything to download it, works like a charm with your Baofeng radio, and a lot of other radios are supported with it also. I think is a critical thing to have. If you're going to be running comms, you've got to have a way to program your equipment, and there's not a better way than Chirp.
And I could add to that, when I was talking about it takes 4 seconds, that was on a Baofeng, you can just simply type in a frequency like a phone number and then hit save. Well, it's not really save, but it says there's that. And then I will say on Chirp, this is how easy Chirp is to use. I'm a lawyer and I'm barely functional at arithmetic and I can use Chirp. What does that tell you? Right? It's that easy. And I'll tell you with my team radios, this is how Chirp is shaking out. I don't know, 140 some channels. I haven't actually done this yet, but it's going to get done. Those team radios will all have the exact same frequencies, and then the repeaters will have stuff preset. It's so easy with Chirp. You just type in your zip code, and it goes, oh, do you want all the local repeaters? And you go, yeah, and then it downloads, and then there's these little offsets and these little tones, which are kind of a pain to do manually. You got to look in a book, blah, blah, blah. Nope, not with Chirp. It's just like, oh, you want all the repeaters in your area? Okay, and I'll tell you something else. This is where security comes in. If we lose one of those radios and now somebody has the key to all those frequencies, I will reprogram those things and then go and update everybody's radios so that radio, it still kind of works in a sense, the lost radio, but it isn't the same set of frequencies. It's so simple. I have a dedicated laptop, a little Toughbook that costs $300 that is my radio laptop. And you just plug it in, and this stuff, I'm serious. I can't emphasize this enough, and I'm not trying to be funny. This is real. If I can do this, anyone listening can do this, and you just got to get over that sort of that big barrier thing. And I got a feeling that soon, whenever I go and I do this Chirp programming, Shelby's going to be looking over my shoulder, and then in about 3 seconds, she's going to go, oh, hey, I can do this, and she'll do it. I mean, you know, it's a great the family that Chirp programs radios together stays together. It's a date night for us.
Well, and let me add this too, and I know we have like a couple minutes here, but I will say this because we've kind of talked about the slog it is to study for the technician's license. Yes, it is. It's more exciting to read our books. It really is. But I've learned a lot.
Nicely done.
Nicely done. Did you see that little there? What I did there? But what I am appreciating about it, though, it's not that hard. It's prepping 2.0. It's not that hard anymore. I have the book. I'm reading the book because I need to know that. There are so many apps out there that just will, because what it is this. There's a pool of 300, 400, whatever, a gazillion questions, several hundred questions. And you go take the test and they will pull 35 of those, whatever. They will pull I don't think it's even that. Do not take what I'm saying as gospel truth, but they take a slice of those and they test you on them. So if all you do is memorize answers, you can pass the test. I actually want to know more. I want to know the behind the scenes stuff. So I'm not just taking a test. So I'm reading the book. In the book, it says this question will be on the test. Here's the answer. So it's really easy to memorize them. You can use apps and do like a flashcard sort of thing and memorize the answers and take the test. It's that easy. So things in this whole world of comms, that's my bottom line to this, have become exponentially easier, cheaper, and much more available and much more needed now. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the after show and carry this conversation over. Where is comms going as our country continues to kind of outlay where we're at and things continue to unfold and things continue to be tense? So we have like a minute. So what do you want to tell our listeners in this final minute, Mr. NC Scout?
I would say practice. The most important thing is getting on the air and doing it. You can sit and talk about wanting to do it all day long. You can look at all the equipment online, and on your phone, mobile device, whatever. You sit there and browse all your internet retailers. Get the equipment and just do it.
On that note, great note to end on. Want to leave you all with our final thought always. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a good week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.